29.84 inches and holding steady. And outside our studios here in Urbana, it's 87 degrees. It's 1240. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. You probably know Roger Ebert by his thumb. For decades, its up or down position has given films the ultimate mark of acceptance or rejection. You may also know the famed film reviewer hails from Urbana, but what you may not know is that Ebert, who turns 70 today, set out to be a journalist, not a critic. Illinois Public Media's Jeff Bossert caught up with friends and colleagues who knew Ebert before The Balcony was open.
There wasn't a lot early in Roger Ebert's life that hinted he would grow up to become one of the world's most recognized film critics. He grew up an only child in East Urbana, to modest beginnings, the son of an electrician, but had an early affinity for the written word. Here's Ebert in a WILL TV appearance in 1995.
I published my first newspaper in grade school. It was called the Washington Street News, and I gave it away to the neighbors. And in high school, I worked for the high school paper, and on and on.
You know, I don't think his youth was much different than yours or mine or anybody else's.
Gary Wyckoff grew up across the street from the Eberts. They met when he was 5 and Roger was 3.
In an idyllic setting to be a kid in the 50s was Urbana, Illinois, and I think that's why Roger's still attached to it like I am.
Ebert, Wyckoff, and other neighborhood kids found ways to make their own fun: softball, bike rides to Crystal Lake Park, and weekly meetings of the Four Stampers Stamp Club.
It gave us an excuse to meet down in the basement and talk about anything.
That's Ebert speaking through the Alex computer application. Ebert has been unable to speak since 2006 due to cancer surgery. Gary Wyckoff believes the stamp collecting may have satisfied his friend's intellectual curiosity, a curiosity which led to Ebert's interest in journalism. Wyckoff let Ebert take over his paper route, delivering the now-defunct Champaign-Urbana Courier.
And I think part of Roger's curiosity about papers and books may have come from his friend Hal Holmes, whose father, Harold Holmes, was editor of the News Gazette back in the late 40s and early 50s.
Harold Holmes hired Ebert to cover his own high school's sports for the Champaign News Gazette. Steve Shoemaker was among the standouts for the Urbana High School Tiger basketball team.
Imagine a high school kid who is himself not very athletic, but who is deciding who gets their name in the paper. And his name was in the paper every day.
Ebert's roles at the local paper range from sports writer to caption writer, to the state desk, to covering obituaries and county fair prize winners. It was then, around 16, that friends say they saw Roger Ebert's potential. The caption below his senior picture in the 1960 Urbana High yearbook listed a litany of activities: Latin club, speech club, science fiction club, which he founded, class plays, and senior class president.
Raj is very, very sharp.
Carol Sharlaw was Ebert's classmate and prom date senior year. In fact, the two were runners-up for the prom court. They went on other dates, including to movies at Urbana's Princess Theater. Both recall it as a relationship of mutual admiration. In Carol's yearbook, Ebert wrote that she was too nice and needed to fight for what she believed in.
You know, you sort of wonder when you think of Raj if maybe he sees something in people that they don't see in themselves, because of his ability to analyze, whether that's sports or that's movies or whatever.
The young Roger Ebert also had a penchant for public performance. For 2 years, he emceed the high school's annual stage show.
Those were the stage show dancers and a very special arrangement of one of the all-time popular hit tunes, The Continental. And good evening, everyone. I'm Roger Ebert, one half of your outstanding Master of Ceremonies combination for this evening. And now I take...
Ebert sang in his church's choir, and though he never performed in a high school choir or played in the high school band, he built a relationship with Urbana High band director and longtime University of Illinois faculty member Dan Perino.
What made Roger effective is that he was always thinking and fitting the right phrase or the right statements into the right place. Because sometimes when you'd get somebody who was an MC, they'd talk too much, you know, and they would collect their own kind of jokes that maybe were funny to them but might not be funny to, you know, to a wide range of audience.
Ebert recalls a night nerves got the best of him while MCing a band concert.
I did a really bad job. Dan was not critical of me, and he had every reason to be. His understanding and sympathy probably was a help in many ways in future emceeing. I have never forgotten that embarrassing night.
In the fall of 1960, Roger Ebert enrolled at the University of Illinois. He rushed Phi Delta Theta and delved into classes like English and fiction writing. He joined the Young Democrats and for a year published his own weekly called the Champaign-Urbana Spectator. He eventually was given his own column in the Daily Illini, and by the fall of 63, applied to be editor.
And the outgoing editors recommended me because they thought Roger was too radical.
But longtime Ebert colleague Dave Reed says they made the right choice.
They asked me who I thought they should pick, and I told them I thought they should pick Roger Ebert because while I thought I would be a really good editor, Ebert was just a brilliant guy, and obviously a guy like that doesn't come along all that often.
With Ebert in charge and Reed as executive editor, that fall the two covered campus reaction to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and they went to California that winter to cover Illinois' last Rose Bowl victory, a 17-7 decision over the Washington Huskies. The two would later work together at the Chicago Sun-Times, and in later years, Reed recruited Ebert to speak before the Illinois College Press Association.
One of the things he said was that the best job I ever had as a journalist was when I worked at the Daily Illini, because when you work at your college paper, you don't do it for money. You do it because you love the doing it.
Many of Ebert's childhood friends say they expected him to do something special, but none guessed he'd become a film critic. And a graduate student named Ron Zook may have played a role in that development.
One day I dropped in at the Daily Illini, where I believe Roger Ebert was the new editor, and said, why don't you have movie reviews? And so he said, write one. And so I did. And they asked me for another one the next week, and that just continued on and on.
Zook, who later taught philosophy at the U of I, says his reviews at least played a role in making his editor believe this was something that could be done. Ebert agrees.
Zook made a great impression on me. He knew an awesome lot about the movies and made me keenly aware of my own paltry information. I went to the movies he recommended. He was a role model.
Ebert earned his bachelor's degree in journalism from the U of I in 1964. After 2 years in graduate school, Ebert became a features writer for the Chicago Sun-Times and then became the paper's film critic when reviewer Eleanor Keene retired.
First, he's a journalist.
Again, Dave Reed.
Might be a movie reviewer, but first he's a journalist, and he does his homework as tremendous intellect because he does the hard work of doing all the reading that you need to have information to support that intellect.
Because he still publishes movie reviews and is active on social media, Ebert has maintained the voice he's always had, despite being unable to physically speak. And he's still young at heart, a lot like the same kid who grew up on East Washington Street in Urbana. When I asked him what his plans were today, he simply replied, "What 70th birthday?" Friends and colleagues who have known Ebert for much of those 70 years would consider it a day worth celebrating, and they hope the balcony remains open and the thumb moves up and down for years to come. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media.
There's extra material online, including two of Ebert's appearances on WILL-TV, interviews with Ebert friends and colleagues Steve Shoemaker, Carol Charlo, and Dave Reed, and clippings from Ebert's days at the Daily Illini and News Gazette. It's on our website, will.illinois.edu.
Come along on our custom-designed trip to England and Wales this September. Experience the real Downton Abbey in a private tour just for friends of WILL. See lovely Cotswold villages, the Yorkshire countryside, and meet Alan J. W. Bell, producer of Last of the Summer Wine. Tour Greenway, Agatha Christie's home, the English spa town of Bath, and visit the Jane Austen Center before wrapping up the trip in London. Our tour is almost full, so call 217-333-7300 for more information.
I'm Melissa Block, hosting All Things Considered this week from NPR West. Today, how do you make a robot more likable?
That one's one of my favorites, for getting people's attention. So this is A.
Or maybe have it strike a humble pose.
Tuck the arms in like this, as opposed to like lifting them big up like this.
Our series on innovators begins today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 18th of June, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "Will You Still Need Me? Will You Still Feed Me? When I'm 64, Paul McCartney turns 70 today, born in Liverpool, England. It's the birthday of the oil tycoon Henry Clay Folger, New York City, 1857. Started out as a clerk, worked his way up, learned the oil business, became president of Standard Oil in 1911. He loved Shakespeare, studied Shakespeare, married his wife Emily, who shared his enthusiasm for Shakespeare. She once read a Shakespeare play every day consecutively for 37 days straight. They collected Shakespeareana first folio editions, and they decided to build a Shakespeare library. They looked in Washington, D.C., found a spot on Capitol Hill, and the library opened, the Folger Library, 2 years after Henry Clay Folger died. It's the birthday of the lyricist Sammy Kahn, born Samuel Cohen in New York, 1913. Wrote Three Coins in the Fountain, Love and Marriage, High Hopes. It was on this day, 1940, Winston Churchill gave his Finest Hour speech. He'd been prime minister for about a month. Nazi Germany had conquered Holland, Belgium, Luxembourg. They'd taken Paris. Britain stood alone against the advancing troops of Hitler. And Churchill addressed the House of Commons about 4 in the afternoon on this day, 1940, talked for about 40 minutes. He concluded with the lines, "Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour." And it's the birthday of Richard Powers, born Evanston, Illinois, 1957, author of 10 novels, including The Gold Bug Variations, The Echo Maker, and his latest novel, Generosity, an Enhancement. Here's a poem for today by Toy Derricott, Black Boys Play the Classics. The most popular act in Penn Station is the three black kids in